Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It's almost Christmas. And as much as we'd like to, most of us can't ask or rely on our families and friends to buy us vendor custom shops this year. But that doesn't mean you need to settle for novelty gifts. One of the most important things you can do is look after your guitar well and properly. That's why I love Music Nomad stuff, because their tools and simple maintenance kits are designed to demystify guitar teching and help you keep your instrument in as good condition as possible with their KISS, Keep It Simple Setup system. They do everything from high-quality polish, as used by Matt Knight, to complete at-home workstation toolkits, gauges and files. As someone who spends a lot of their time at a guitar bench, I don't think anyone makes better stuff. So do yourself a favour this year and check out musicnomadcare.com for a whole bunch of awesome guitar care stuff. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
I'm well again.
And Jay Cross.
I'm extremely strong.
Yeah, but you are strong, and Matt is well. And dear listener, it's the season finale of season two. It's the last episode of season two before we go off to GOTY, to Gear of the Year. And then it's it. Then that's it until season three in January. So, yes.
Welcome. Is it going to be like, is season three going to be like True Detective, where actually what you've got is three different storylines from someone's, I don't know, is that a spoiler? No, you find that out like immediately, don't you? Like three different storylines from someone's life being played through at the same time. So, actually, you might record some of Gear of the Year in February.
Right. Yeah.
But also, you know, some of the Summon Am preview happens in December, even that happened ages ago. I reckon that's what you should do.
That would be good. Yeah. Yeah. That's the great thing about True Detective is you're never 100% sure what's going on, because they never really tell you. You're not, you know, there's no thing saying this is this timeline. So, you know, it's mysterious until you understand.
That's not a spoiler, is it? That happens.
No.
You find that out immediately.
Yes, I think that's what True Detective is known for, isn't it? It's the whole timeline thing. But we can't really do that within the podcast. So maybe what I should do is...
No, I think you should. I think you should just make it up. In March, you should just be recording the Amp of the Year podcast.
That's a
good
idea.
And just make some stuff up. Just be like, oh, can't believe the brand new Vox.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Bungo Buster is finally here. Mm. And it is, this came out of nowhere, the Bungo Buster. And we love it. And it's, wow. Who would have thought a 22-inch speaker would be so convenient for guitar players? You know, that's what I think you should be doing, Joe.
What happens if I accidentally predict something correctly, though?
Well, I mean, you know.
That could be a problem. There could be libelous involved. I could accidentally predict something that hasn't yet come out that is being made. Or even maybe I actually do predict, maybe companies start making things off
that
the
bat. You've predicted, absolutely. I think that is far more likely. I can hear out in the distance the Vox engineers saying, wow, we do have some 22-inch speakers.
Because we've had no flipping ideas since the AC30, so this is... no, but, you know,
know, actually, you saying that has made me think that this is a little risky. So an alternative could be to just put each host's audio out of sync.
Oh, I mean, that's, I love that. Absolutely love that. Or alternatively, do you remember, so we've been watching, well, whenever it's on, I stick on Top of the Pops 2, you know, on a Friday evening or whatever, because it's just, it's wicked, like finding, watching an old episode of Top of the Pops and seeing all the completely mad stuff that was popular in the 80s or whatever, and all these incredibly ugly pop stars who just, there's no way that...
Always ugly. Teeth issues.
Just really ugly people were famous in the 80s, and it's, the standard's just so much higher nowadays, which is obviously why we do a podcast and not a television show. One of the things that Top of the Pops did for a while was, in order to get the sound in stereo, you could tune your radio. Like they would run it on Radio 1 as well. No. So you could... you could have the audio of the songs coming through your radio. So you turn off the TV audio and watch it on your TV, but have the audio from your television. So, sorry, from your radio, which, you know, probably had a much better sound system. And so you could, yeah, get like proper stereo and stuff. And that's what I think you should be doing, Joe, is you should be recording one podcast, but release it on... as three different podcasts, and people then can play them on different devices, and they can just, you know, if they really, if they want to get that surround sound experience, if they want to listen more to your dulcet tones, then they stand a little bit closer. And obviously for me, they will be putting it out in the garden,
because
my voice carries so well, it doesn't matter.
It does carry.
It's absolutely fine. And then Matt, they will have in their pocket, because they just want to feel really, really close to him. And, you know, and actually what you could also do is just have one for Mark, which people just won't listen to, because why would they? And I think that's a really innovative and exciting way to do podcasts.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. I think you are onto something. Was it Frank Zappa who did that? I think it is. And I've just been trying to Google it, and I can't remember the name of the record. I'm sure it's Frank Zappa who released a record where different parts of different instruments were on each of the discs that you got.
Oh, fantastic. Yes. So you had to have like multiple CD players, I guess.
Who would have multiple record decks? So you had to, like, I assume he was thinking, yeah, you're going to have to call all your friends, all come around one place. Everyone's going to have to set one up, and, you know, you're going to have to...
like a LAN party.
And you're going to have to pop that needle down at exactly the right time.
Well, but that's the thing with the podcast. In all seriousness, this would be really cool. So people, you just put out a flat version, like with no EQing or whatever, and then people can download the podcast. It just goes out on the regular feed, but they can have the podcast on their phone and on their iPad and on their computer. And you just surround yourself like some sort of seance, guitar nerd seance, and you just sit in the middle of it and you move your devices around depending on how close you want them to.
Oh, I'm into this.
I'm sure we spoke about it before, but you mentioning the record thing made me remember that there's a Monty Python album where one side is actually, although it looks like a normal record, there's actually two different grooves for two different songs.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Depending on where you put the needle is what song. But because obviously the grooves are so fine, you could literally play a record for like 10 years and only ever hear one side, and then... the needle just goes in a different place, and that's it. You've got a totally different song.
I love it. I saw an interview with them talking about this, and they were saying that what they wanted was for people to like listen to a sketch or a joke and be like, oh, that is hilarious, and then later be wanting to show a friend it and try and put it back on, and it'd be something totally
different. Something rubbish.
And them having no idea why.
I love that. That is fantastic.
And where you were talking about Frank Zappa, I wasn't sure, Joe, if you were talking about... he's got a really... well, he coined a term called... I'm going to say it's pronounced xenochrony or xenochrony, which was where he would take solos from live recordings and then use those as the solos for tracks he would then put on a studio album later on.
Right.
So all of his solos on one of his albums, Joe's Garage, for example, or Garage, all of the solos, apart from one, are all live solos from other concerts.
Yes. Great stuff.
And there's a couple of his records that are basically just mixes of two live performances where the guitar is just over another performance. They're just in the same key. So you get all this really weird, like, polyrhythmic stuff and
stuff going slightly out of time and out of phase, I guess.
It's so weird, but it's all before digital recording techniques. You know, this is literally like onto tape. Which have either of you started to watch? Maybe this would be something for Marky P. But have either of you started to watch the Beatles Get Back?
No. Oh yes, yes. Well, you know, as a little caveat, a precursor for the dear listener, we are Mark Packham is going to be joining us on the Patreon. So we I think over there we are going to be talking a little bit. Inevitably, we're going to be talking about the Get Back sessions. I've started. Yes, I'm nearly through the first one, so I've already seen the argument. I've already seen Paul McCartney literally being the best Beatle by a mile for about the first hour and a half, or at least the only one who seems to care about anything. Also, so just the gear that he's using is absolutely wonderful. Yeah. Fender Bassman 100 with one of those big 215 cabs. And he's brought in, I'm on like day three because I take you through each of the 14 days, and he's bringing in like different Hofner basses every day. And oh, they're all fantastic.
It's pretty mad because when they start the session, they're like, "Yeah, how are we going to record this?" And they're like, "Thought someone was bringing like the 8-track." And they're like, and you realise like how impractical it obviously was to record in 1969. And then they end up getting George Harrison's out of his studio. But it made me think about something I wanted to talk about, which was they reference a guy whose nickname is Magic Alex. Yes. And this guy became the head of electronics at Apple, I think in the late 60s, but basically was just like a studio engineer. And they were just like, we need this 8-track record. And they're just like, just ask Magic Alex, he'll build us one. And they basically like hire this guy to like build a studio in Twickenham. And you just think now you can literally like, you know, do it on your phone, or you've got like Isotope Spire. It's so easy to like record and mix and just like chop samples. We were talking at work the other day about like, you know, lo-fi hip hop and people chopping samples. And like, actually, it was, you know, not impossible, but man, you really forget. You watch something like the Beatles documentary, you know, 1969, you forget like how much harder everything.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Would have been. And how much money
people
you had
don't
to
know a bloody born, do they? That's a problem nowadays, Matt. People don't know a born. You know? Don't know the born. That's the problem. Problem is, right, people don't know that they're born. They're not aware that they're born. It's bonkers.
It is bonkers.
That is true. Well, what is the Beatles track where they run out of tape so it has the hard finish?
She's So Heavy?
Yeah, She's So Heavy. You're right. That has the... They were just recording for ages, looping that riff, and they literally ran out of tape and so kept the ending.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for all the spoilers, guys. I appreciate that. That's nice.
Oh, that's not from the show. That's a widely known Beatles thing, which obviously has been emulated all over the place ever since, you know.
Oh, right.
Even Portishead do it on Third, I think. I only mentioned that because there was a discussion about Portishead on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook.
All right.
But there you go. There you go.
I love Portishead.
Yes, as do I. Now onto some guitar stuff. Matt, you've been setting up some crazy big like looper rig at home.
I have. So I've sort of been thinking about, Boss released a couple of new loopers this year, and I was thinking, like, want to have some crazy, you know, I want to, you know, the end all of all loopers. I kind of just want something that does a bit of everything. But I've also been really inspired on Instagram by a kind of movement of loads of people who are now using old 4-track tapes for like ambient stuff. So you've got a cassette and then there's 4 different loops playing, and then they're just like, you know, manipulating the volume.
Just like push and play on them and stuff.
Yeah, push and play, manipulating the volume. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then running that through some pedals. And I was like, how could I do that without spending a ridiculous amount of money on a Tascam tape recorder, because now everyone wants one. They just go for crazy money.
It's just absolutely bonkers to me that stuff is expensive.
All of this has happened before.
Yeah, well exactly, Joe.
Exactly. You know, we couldn't get rid of them at one point, you know, and now they're just going for crazy money. And I was thinking, actually, the RC505 Mark II is 5 loops. It is like
the 505 is that's the DJ one. That's the one for your hands.
That's
right?
Like the desktop one, I guess you would say.
The beatboxer one.
The beatboxing one. And it's got 5 volume controls for each loop.
Right.
So I was like,
each beat that you want to box.
And I was like, oh, if you do 5 loops on that, you can then obviously manipulate it in real time with the faders. But all of the loops can be out of sync. So you can go for that kind of real Eno thing.
What you're talking about here is Music for Airports.
I
already know what you're talking
what
about.
What I'm talking about is trying to, how can I musically recreate Music for Airports on a 505? And so,
the greatest record of all time.
Of course, the greatest record of all time. Jay, of course, you're in the top 0.5% of Brian Eno listeners.
Brian Eno was my, of course, probably at least the third year running. In recent years, Brian Eno has overtaken the Weakerlands, who always used to be my top artist. But yes, Spotify did tell me that I was in the top 0.5% of Brian Eno listeners. I don't know whether it does it on minutes listened or tracks listened, but I think it's minutes.
Okay, fine.
I think
get a lot of like French prog get oddly high up in my list, even though I've only listened to it a handful of times, but the tracks are 20 minutes long.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So basically, I want to be Brian Eno and I want to play Music for Airports live. So rather than going for the 600, which is the floor based looper, I was like, I'm going to use the 505 and I've set a single foot switch to use the record function. So I don't have to try and hit the record button with my hand. But I wanted the desktop one so I can manipulate stuff in real time, because having played around with it a lot more over the last week, I didn't realize that the input and output effects, so it's got an entire multi-effects in it, can be routed to individual tracks. So you can record a loop and then you can apply reverb to only that loop.
Like in post?
In post.
Huh.
And in pre, cool. And in pre if you want. So you could record into a track and have an input track that an effect that only affects one track. So when you're recording track one, you always get delay, but when you go to track two, it's totally dry, for example.
That's great. That's great.
So I was like, oh, so now I can add, and you can obviously then manipulate that in real time because you've got four control knobs that will edit the effects in real time. So you can get some, and because they've all got spillover, you can have huge reverbs, then turn the track off, and then you can fade it, and you can still manipulate the reverb in post. So I've been doing a lot of that, but what I've quickly realized is that my pedal board, I wanted the amps to mimic exactly what I was putting into it. So if I ran, I run a pedal board with like in stereo, but one side is dry and one side is wet. So one side doesn't have delays. I was like, well, if I put both of those into a stereo input on the RC505 and then go stereo out, it actually sums the signals together and then splits it out into dual mono. So you lose that kind of split in your amps. And then I was like, actually, what I really want is the loops to only go through a monitor. So I can then just have the amps just always just be the guitar sound. And then the loops come through a monitor. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that you can do that as well. So I'm now internally routing the two inputs directly to two outputs that are never ever looped, but then sending anything that I do loop to a separate monitor output, so you can play over the top of it and you've not got your loops running through your normal guitar amps and getting all muddy. You're sending it through a separate amplifier, and then you can control the volume of that with the faders. So kind of got this crazy setup where the looper sort of sits at the end of the chain but only loops the signal through one monitor, so you get a lot more clarity with what you're doing. And for ambient stuff, it is absolutely bananas. Just so much stuff that you can do with it. I'm like, this for me is way better than spending £1,000 on a Tascam 4-track.
Wait, that's how much money
they're... they're going for crazy. I can't remember, there's a particular model, Tascam 4-track tape. There's a particular model that people are after at the moment. So some of the Porter Studios, which I think is the 414, they're £400.
Well, it's iZotope's holiday deals, and they've really pushed the boat out this year with three incredible bundles of some of our favourite plugins. The holiday bundle at only $49 includes Ozone Elements, Neutron Elements, RX Elements, and Nectar Elements, plus creative staples like Trash 2 and Iris 2, legendary exponential audio reverbs like Phoenix Verb and R2. The plugins on their Todd would be around $1,300, so this is literally unbelievable. If you don't use iZotope, this is a perfect place to start. Or you can elevate your production with the iZotope Holiday Bundle Platinum Edition. Upgrades include Ozone Standard, Neutron Standard, and now you can add industry-leading polish to your music alongside Nectar Elements and RX Elements, plus Trash 2, Iris 2, Stutter Edit 2, and more. Mix, master, repair, and create with ease using this versatile 11-plugin bundle. Over $1,800 in value for only $99. And finally, the Diamond Bundle upgraded to include Ozone Standard, Neutron Standard, Nectar 3 Plus, Neo Verb, and RX Elements. All the stuff that we use to make this podcast. Get yourself the gift you really want this year. The Diamond Bundle offers over $2,200 in value, and all for just $149. Check out all of these deals and more over at iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast.
But still, £400 for a tape recorder.
I mean, it's better than it going into landfill, but geez Louise.
I know. And obviously, it's on tape.
Yeah.
So doing a lot of that really, which has been really kind of, it's been a really good creative tool for looping what I've kind of always wanted to loop, which is doing some more of the ambient stuff, being able to save it, being able to recall stuff, being able to manipulate the effects in real time. Because obviously a looper always sits at the end of your chain. So if you're then like using a certain reverb or something, you can't then affect how the loop sounds. So you can manipulate things in real time. And that's been really, really cool. So what I want to start doing is getting more like field recordings. And then splitting that across five tracks, so you can manipulate those in real time, but then you can still loop over the top of it.
The big question then is the 505 battery powered?
It is
can
not.
You run on batteries?
No, unfortunately not.
That, imagine that if you could have just taken that out to a field with a microphone and just
just looped just away.
Like, oh wait, there's a little brook. There's a brook just like, listen to the beautiful water rushing through this brook. Oh, just capture that. Oh, listen to that bird singing. Oh, yeah, fantastic. Oh, wait, there's a cow about to moo. And then you get that and then you loop all of that stuff.
Oh, and then you run it through the modulated delay into the reverb.
Exactly, yeah.
Looping it.
Can you predict when a cow's going to moo?
Have you not reached that level of veganism yet?
I think it's a couple of tears.
Yeah, there's a couple of tears. It won't be long, mate. Don't worry.
if you Google it, all you get is why do cows moo? So unfortunately, why do cows moo for no reason? Apparently,
right. Well, it's not no reason. It's just a secret lockdown by the Vegan Society, and I'm not quite there yet. So. I will get there. But Matt, I will recommend freesound.org. It's where I get an awful lot of my field recordings and samples and things that I use for Polymath. It's just, I have an account on that. You can upload stuff. I often do, like, just things that I have field recorded with bits and bobs. I got into a habit around the start of lockdown, like a year ago, of when I was going on walks, taking a little Zoom H1.
Oh, yeah,
with
you
me.
Did do that, didn't you, for Slur?
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, for the Slurs. Music that I was making, it was great. Like, I was just I was just recording the audio of like footsteps on different surfaces and things like that, and conversation as people pass you on walks and things. It's really great, and then you can just sort of mess around with it afterwards. So I uploaded a bunch of that stuff to freesound.org, but freesound.org is also fantastic if you want to just download things. You find a whole bunch of stuff from the whole way around the world, loads of different field recordings at varying qualities, but sometimes, to be honest, often the weird, warbly, low quality recordings are quite fun to work with as well. So
that is that website is proper Ron Seal, isn't it? That is
for the American listeners. Explain that one.
It just does. Ron Seal is a I don't know what it is, like varnish, a fence finish over here, and basically the logo, the slogan is it does exactly what it says on the tin. And Free Sound is maybe the most Ron Seal website I've ever heard of.
It's a very what'd you
get on here? Oh, sound. Oh, how much is it? Oh, it's free. Oh, wicked. That's exactly what I was looking for.
that is exactly, yes, that is what you get. But Matt, on the guitar front, in your setup, so you're using two amps along with the 505?
Well, three, technically.
Three.
Right, okay. What are the three?
So I'm running the Morgan PR-12.
Which one's doing what as
okay,
well?
Okay, so guitar goes into the pedal board, splits out wet dry, so one side gets delays and reverbs, that's a lie. The pedal board that I'm using, one side gives you the SY200 and the other side does not. Right. So I could loop the synth sound separately with separate
effects.
So
that's similar to the way Rabia set up the SY200 in his video demo of it.
Yes. So,
which, dear listener, is well worth checking out. If you're thinking about getting an SY200, which I think a lot of you are, seeing as it's doing so well in the listener's choice for gear of the year at the moment, Rabia's video is an absolute masterclass in how to get the most out of that pedal.
Yeah. So, I basically run it doing a pedal board that splits synth sound and the normal guitar sound. That goes into the 505. The normal sound runs into the Morgan PR-12, and the synth sound runs into the Rajani VOD-50.
Is that because the Rajani's a cleaner, crisper amplifier?
No, I think it's actually got a bit more grit to it and a bit more drive, right. Which is quite nice for some of the synthy sounds. And the Morgan's just super, super clean. So that's right, always good for some of the sort of delays and reverbs. And then, I've run a sub out direct into a JC22.
Oh, they're so good. They're so good. I've never owned a Jazz Chorus. I think I want a Jazz Chorus.
Well, Joe, if you're going to buy one, as we've said before, just buy a JC120. Absolute best.
Yeah, they're very heavy, aren't they?
They're not as heavy as you think they're going to be.
So what's a JC40?
By that I mean it doesn't weigh as much as a twin.
No, they're 61 you know. Pounds.
Okay, that's quite a lot.
Yes.
That's a lot of weight. So a JC40, that's like 700 quid. And that, what do you get? Is that still a 210, is it?
Yes. Yeah, 210. 210. So the thing that I like about those is that you've got the stereo in, and then obviously if you're running stereo effects, it does split them across two speakers, which is quite cool.
Right, that is nice.
And then you've obviously got the chorus, which is like the classic chorus. And then on the back, you can also line out, but you can also, I think...
Line out with a cab sim?
I don't think so, actually. I think that might just be direct out, so you can go into a PA. Maybe it does... No, it must carry the line out from the preamp section, I wonder.
Okay.
And then you've got a stereo effects loop as well. But to be honest, the 22 is exactly the same. It's just slightly smaller with smaller speakers.
Is the 22 still giggable? What's the 22? Because I'm looking at £1,100 at the moment-ish. £1,200 for a JC120. £700 for the 40. The 22...
22 is actually 30 watts with two 8-inch speakers. And the 40 is 40 watts with two 10-inch speakers.
Eight-inch speakers is just on that side of, fear. Sort of that? But I'm getting that sort of like that old man sort of like, you can't do an 8-inch speaker sort of thing. Like, I'm getting that in the back of my head.
It's just, it's bright, should I say. So, like, at the moment, mine's like almost head height, and it just overpowers all the other amps. Only obviously it's a bit higher, so it's a bit more directional, but it's also so bright it just cuts over everything.
Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad. Since 2010, Music Nomad Equipment Care has been making premium and innovative guitar care products used and trusted every day by top guitar repair shops, guitar makers, and touring techs in over 40 countries. Pro quality but affordable, Music Nomad is also the go-to for countless guitar players around the globe to help guitars look, sound, and play their best. After 2 years of research and development, and in a collaboration with top guitar repair shops, Music Nomad has developed the Keep It Simple setup. They demystified the guitar setup process by developing innovative precision gauges and tools combined with step-by-step general guidelines anybody can follow and set up their guitar to play and sound great. With their KISS method and their gauges, you can check the vital areas of your guitar and use their toolkits to perform your own setups. They have a 24-page instructional booklet available in 7 languages, downloadable for free, loads of how-to videos, as well as complete setup video tutorials for popular brands such as Fender, Gibson, Taylor, PRS, and more. Not only is it fun, but a properly set up guitar takes your playing and sound to a whole new level. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com. Follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare and kiss your guitar with Music Nomad's Keep It Simple setup.
There's not a lot of price difference between the 22 and the 40. Like, there is, obviously, like £250, but that's not enough. They're both in that ballpark of spending money on an amp.
Yeah.
You know, spending money on a giggable amp.
I think if you haven't plugged one in for a long time and somewhere like Brighton Electric has one, go and plug in.
20s that electric a lot.
Yeah, they're just, man, they are just exceptional sounding amplifiers. And it's just amazing, like, how many people still use them. I watched, when I was ill, I watched Some Kind of Monster, which I've never seen before, which is the Metallica documentary about them recording Saint Anger, and that them going through like this whole kind of therapy thing, and James Hetfield going into rehab, and loads of times you see them recording and he's just playing guitar and he's just got a JC-120 behind him. It's just so bizarre.
I love the idea of something absolutely crystal crisp clear. I've always loved jazz choruses.
They're so loud as well. They are so loud.
Foolish of me. Do you get attenuation on a 120? No. Or does the volume work?
To be honest, I think once you get to about halfway, you're never really going to go any louder because it's just... It's max. It's like a twin. It's like when you get to a certain point on a twin, you're like, you're just getting more gain. Mm. Not necessarily more volume. But the JC-120, it's just so loud. Just so loud.
I think I need to go and compare a 22 and a 40. I definitely need a jazz chorus in my life. It's a foolish thing of me to have not had.
Mm.
I need to A/B a 22 and a 40. See if I can risk those 8-inch speakers.
Yeah, or you just line out into a PA, just a 30,000 watt PA system.
Yes, you could. Well, I mean, you know, this is the thing about Katana, and also the same with the Fender Tone Masters, is having a line out with a cab sim on it makes so much difference. Like when obviously Tim, the guitarist in Polymath, he plays Boss Katanas, and when we're on tour and we're setting up and everything, I always mention that there is a cab sim line out to the sound guy on Tim's amps. You know, when we're setting up, just, you know, they're going to mic up the guitar amps. It's what they do every day of the week. I assume that, but I mention it every time just in case. And the only time someone took me up on it was in Cardiff. And admittedly, you know, when you get there early and the sound engineer's playing his own music, the sound guy was playing a lot of very tech metal.
Right. Okay. So they were used to.
Yeah. So he was definitely into this sort of thing. But I mentioned it to him and he was like, oh, fantastic. Well, I'll get it will be better. I'll get a cleaner signal if I do that. So we won't mic up the guitar amps. I'll just take the line out on them if they've got a cab sim. And he did that at no detriment to the show. It's just there is a very old school sort of thought about miking up a guitar amp, and a lot of sound guys conform to that. And also, to be honest, we're still in very early doors of guitar amps having line outs with cab sims that are good, you know. The Fender Tone Master stuff and the Boss Katanas are probably some of the only sort of amp, you know, proper amp style stuff, as I mean, not, you know, Helix or GT or whatever, proper amps that actually include that feature. But it's very good. I thoroughly recommend it, Katana and Tomas.
You talking about that, I was going to say, Jay, how is your super reverb?
Yeah,
how
I mean...
is your super reverb, Jay?
Great. It's, I haven't had much of a chance to plug it in properly because... You know, I haven't had a day off in what feels like 15 years, but it's great. It sounds so good. I can't believe how light it is. It looks, I just love having it next to me, just being like, wow, yeah, look at this.
Oh, man.
Look at this amp. Look at this amp that's next to me. This is so cool.
It's
so cool. So, yeah, I mean, time where it's really shone for me was actually when I plugged my bass 6 into it.
Ugh.
I just thought it sounded absolutely unbelievable.
And it
really kind of made the bass 6 sound bass 6, when I play bass 6, whenever I have played a bass 6, it's always kind of, okay, well, I'm sort of playing it like a guitar and it's a little bit flappy here and there. But actually, I feel like playing it into that because it's the 410 and it's more of a kind of traditional bass style loadout rather than, you know, going into a Blues Junior or going into an AC30 or whatever it is that I would have plugged it into when we were working at GAC. I just think you just get so much more tonality and so much more richness from it. And it's like, it sounds amazing. And I haven't even really needed to do much in the way of plugging in effects because I just have so much fun just playing both the chords that I know clean into the amp with a bit of, just a bit of reverb and a bit of tremolo built into the amp. It's just, yeah, it's really cool. It's a really, really good amp.
Oh man, I really need to. I wish I'd had chance to come and see you within the last couple of months, so I could have played it. Desperate to.
All right, not to.
Oh, not to hang out with you, Jay. not to hang out with you.
Not because we're mates and you miss me. No. Just to like come and check out this big amp that I've got in my house.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing better than checking out a mate's big amp.
I bet a bass 6 would sound great with an old Bassman combo.
Yeah,
Bassman 10, 2-channel, 50-watt, 410. That's the right one. There's one at Brighton Electric at the moment, and it's absolutely wonderful. It's so like not really great for bass, you know. It's not quite there for bass as a 50-watt, but
well, I think it's. I'm not sure. Yeah, but also you say it's not great for bass. Like, I guess it's like it's not great for the sort of modern style of bass.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
playing.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
You know, I'm not trying to. It's really funny how things have kind of changed, and my playing has changed in that sense as well. You know, like I say, I would have been playing when we worked at GAC and the basics first became available again. I really was kind of playing it like a guitar, and that you sort of have to find a midpoint with it because it isn't a guitar and it isn't a bass. It really is kind of its own thing, and. When you know, it's not going to sound good into a heavy metal amp, for example. Like, you're not going to plug a bass 6 into a diesel or anything. Do you know what I mean? But like, I don't know, man. I think it's wicked. I love it. I love it. It's really very, very cool.
It is very cool. Have you found using it with the bass cut or without the bass cut? And what pickups have you found that you're using more?
What pickups am I using more? I don't know, really. And also, I don't know which way bass cut is up or down on the thing, so...
Neither do I. I just listen, but yeah, I have no idea.
No, I don't know, to be honest with you. I think I've probably... Have I had all three on? I don't know. I don't know. I'm also like I say, kind of in the same way as... Because I've not been using it to write songs or anything. To be honest with you, I've kind of been using it almost as like a bit of a like a meditative tool, because I really do like I'm never going to play in a band where I or have any kind of drive to write songs using the bass 6.
Right,
and that has always been why I like playing guitar and why I like playing bass. It's like I like kind of, you know,
having an end result for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's been a couple of years now, so even that's a bit of a pipe dream. But like, you know, I've always played an instrument to be in a band, and I'm never going to do that with the bass 6. And actually, it's quite freeing because I just sort of, when I play it, I just play it. And like, sometimes I'll mess around with the switches, and sometimes I'll mess around with the tremolo. But generally, I'm just playing it, and I'm not really thinking. And yeah, I find it very therapeutic. So I can't actually tell you what it is that I do too much with in terms of pickup selection.
Well, it is.
Cause I'm just losing myself in the moment, man. I'm just like,
fine. Fair enough. Well, yes, it is. I know exactly what you mean. I always, when I'm picking up an instrument and there's not like an end result of me writing something with it, it takes me a minute to get into that. I'm just enjoying playing it. Sort of thing,
totally. You know? Totally.
But I think that's from like spending a lot of time in bands, I guess, is the main thing I think that you and I probably have there. Is it makes it harder to just enjoy the moment of playing guitar.
It is something that I've been trying to do a bit more of, and you know, really, I guess I should be kind of trying to play a bit better as well. And to a degree, I have. I mean, I definitely feel like I'm a better guitarist now than I was kind of pre-COVID. Not that the bar was particularly set that high, but I am kind of being a bit more twiddly is not the right word, but like, you know, trying to find chords that I find interesting that aren't just. You know, G, B, E or whatever. I don't know. I think the basics is a big part of that because I'm just having to work my way around essentially a new instrument.
Well, yes. It is a new instrument, a very different instrument. One that I can imagine suiting you an awful lot, but dear listener, if you've never had
one. Like a short scale like it looks like a normal size guitar on me. Is that why?
No, because they're quite brash. Like they're very brash instruments. I kind of feel like when I play a bass six, I try to play a bass six a bit like a bass, and that's not where it sits well. And like what it has is all this, all this brashness and unwieldiness, which I think kind of. I feel like it lends itself really well. I know traditionally it's like tic-tac stuff where bass six is really excelled, or, you know, late Beatles is where the bass six is kind of featured a lot. But I feel like punky, aggressive stuff is kind of the area that that instrument feels like it should sound at its best. A very cool bass indeed. Dear listener, you should get a Classic Vibe bass six if you haven't already.
It's funny because... I know we've talked about this a lot over the years, but when did those Vim mods first come out? Was it 2013, 2014? 2014, I feel like it must have been.
Yeah, definitely.
And we kind of had it in our heads that, wow, this is going to be a revolution, and we're going to see, because we sold so many of them when we were at GAC, and we got really excited by them, and we just thought, wow, this is really going to lead to a kind of innovation in terms of music, and we're going to see all these bands coming out playing bass sixes now. And it never happened, and the Vim mod kind of disappeared a little bit into obscurity. You didn't really see people talking about them on the internet, I guess, so much. And I kind of feel like the Classic Vibe coming back, actually, I thought was a bit of surprising because of what I kind of perceived as maybe a drop off in popularity of it after all the people that wanted one bought one.
Yeah.
And then that's it. There wasn't really any new entrants into the market. But I wonder if the kind of rise of the Instagram guitarist and the ambient player has kind of been that revolution that we were expecting to see on the gigging scene, and it hasn't come from the gigging scene. What it's come from is people making ambient music at home with
absolutely, very well could be. Well, I'm glad to see it back, and in some great colors as well, you know. Shopping bass six, very cool. Very cool indeed. Now, this week, old Marky P came around my house, and he was like, "Joe, you have all this stuff, and you're constantly talking about how you need to save for a house. So why don't we sell the stuff that you don't?"
He hosted an intervention, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it was an intervention, and I was really like, he sort of came. We'd arranged it, and even when he came round, I was like, "I don't know, man. I really like being the guy with all the stuff. I like it when a friend calls me up and is like, 'Oh, I've got a recording next week, and I need this. Do you have anything with shimmer reverb?'" And I'll be like, "Yeah, I have these things." I kind of liked being that guy. I felt like some sort of apothecary, you know, that people...
Magic Alex.
Yeah, Magic Alex. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, I felt like, you know, that. I liked being that guy. And so when Mark was like, "Yeah, we could get rid of..." He came into my garage, went to my pedal shelf and was like, "Yeah, what about this? Do you use this? Do you use this?" And I'm like, no. Because I don't use any of it because, you know, I use like... 5 boss pedals or whatever, but you know, so we,
5 boss pedals and 2 jazz basses.
One of them's a Squire. God damn it, I'm so dull. But yeah, so he taught me into it, and of course, even when it comes to guitars, like all I'm playing are my 2 harmony guitars really at the moment, and you know, Mark was like, it's lovely, and Mark said he thinks it's the best guitar that any of us, the original Guitar Nerds hosts, owns. Well, it was his favorite anyway. But I had the Gibson Custom Historic 59 ES175D in vintage old stock, the sort of slightly tarnished but new custom finish, Memphis made Gibson ES175, which is so lovely and so wonderful, and it's got a gorgeous, a wonderful flame top and a lovely sunburst. But the truth is, it's been in my closet for at least a year because I don't use it And it's not suitable for the stuff that I play, really. So, you know, even that, he convinced me to list for sale, along with a load of other stuff. But I don't know. I don't know how I'm feeling. Like, you know, good and
bad. I mean,
bad.
Think, you know, if you get what you have listed it for, that's like, you know, that's like an ensuite. You know, that's it's not quite a whole room, but that's right. You're getting quite a lot of floor space for that. You know,
yeah, it's good. But it felt like the end of an era. There was really all this stuff that I've just had, even though I don't play it anymore. I was like, I can't remember the last time I sold anything. You know,
yeah.
I just accumulate. I don't decumulate. But
I think from past experience, you tend to just like forget about it after like 6 months, and then it's only like 6 years later you go, oh yeah, I forgot I had that, really wish I did. But I honestly find that a regular cleanse of your pedal cabinet is totally worth doing.
And selling stuff's rubbish though.
Selling stuff is rubbish, but
it's so rubbish.
I think when you can quickly work out what you are never going to plug in again versus something that you're like, maybe, you know, and I think you can always clear off a bunch of stuff that is like a bit of a I'm never going to plug that in again sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, see, Mark came out on Friday. I sold 11 pedals since then. I sold,
oh wow,
like,
nice.
Yeah. So that, you know, that's been good. But you know, before every single pedals, once I sold every pedal, I was like, right, I'm gonna give this pedal a send-off, so I'm going to plug it in and play it one last time. And, you know, I was pleased with almost all of them, where I was like, I have other things that do this. I'm happy to let this go, you know, which was good. That was a good position to be in. The one pedal where I was like, man, this thing sounds absolutely incredible out of all the things I sold was the Pedal PAL Effects, PAL 800. It's
the JCM 800 emulator.
JCM 800 emulator. Mark Packham, big fan of it. He was a big fan of it. And because JCMs have never really been my bag, I just, you know, it just wasn't on my radar. I was just like, this is a thing that we have. But, you know, I plugged it in. I plugged it in. I was like, this is so good. I'm gonna film a little bit of it and record some audio for guitar notes, just because it sounds so good. So I plugged it in into Studio One, used the Corey Wong Neural DSP plugin on default, so it's just like a clean amp, basically, sort of valve-esque, but still very clean, and ran the PAL 800 in front of it. Just absolutely fantastic. Did that thing where you could do that, it's not quite high gain, is it, but it's that punk rock version of drive, that sort of distortion drive thing where you're really diming the gain. And it just sounded wonderful, so thick and brilliant and like mid focused. I absolutely loved it. But you could also drop the gain, boost the volume, and then all of a sudden you almost got a little less compression, a bit more dynamics. It allowed the pedal PAL to breathe a bit more, and I was like, man, if JCMs actually sound like this, I should get a JCM, because these do actually sound good, which is the first time I've ever thought a Marshall actually sounds good. But
it was a South American company, wasn't it?
It was. Apparently, Mark was telling me all about them as he was listing it for me on Friday, but he was saying they only made 332.
Wow.
Or 337. Wow. It was a very specific number like that, but it was a very limited run. It sounded absolutely fantastic. I thought they did a great job of something that's such a well-trodden path as a, you know, a JCM emulating pedal. It sounded absolutely brilliant. Well, you know, well worth getting, dear listener, if you do ever happen across one.
Nice.
Joe, you shouldn't be telling people about the stuff you've already sold. You should be telling people about stuff that you haven't
exactly.
sold.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm trying not to use this podcast as a sales platform, so I'm only talking about the stuff.
I mean, when has this podcast ever been anything other than a Joe Branton sales platform?
Yes, that is. That is. Yeah.
Come see my band, please.
Buy my stuff. Oh no, Jay, you've let
Do
on.
Do you like Japanese guitars?
You've in the finale of season two. You've let on my secret.
Absolutely rumbled. Yeah.
I feel like I was getting away with that. Oh well. You know what? I was actually in. I was up in on Denmark Street in London over the weekend, and I went for a little stroll around. All the other guitar shops. I was at the Ashdown pop-up shop on the weekend, and I went for a little stroll around. I went to one Joe's, and I found this these pedals in this cabinet that I'd never seen before, called a Horothia, which, dear listener, you can check out at horothia.com. They were, I think, only available in one Joe's. Really interesting. They make... just three pedals, just this one fellow who's got like a really interesting sort of, you know, he there's a whole about us on the website where he talks about why he made these pedals and how he's sort of seeking to recreate incredibly high quality sort of vintage styled effects. But they were absolutely brilliant. He did the Type 1, which is a 1980s sort of chorus kind of thing, and then he has the Teeth and also the Berkeley. The Teeth is like glassy cleans and edge of breakup, two sides of a drive pedal combined that you can blend between, which was my favorite. And then the Berkeley as well, which is a reimagining of the Leslie speaker sort of thing. Very cool, interesting look to these pedals. Very like there's almost an Atari button style foot switch.
Yeah. Just them. Looking at the Type 1, it looks absolutely phenomenal. Like really cool design, great simple artwork, one knob and the big button. 12 volt power supply, which is a little bit irritating, but I suppose most power supplies nowadays have got.
Oh, that is strange. Yes, 12, that is weird.
200 quid it looks like for that.
Yeah,
it's very cool. Looks very, very cool indeed.
Very cool indeed. Yeah, I love it. Love the graphics. Love the simplicity. Just an intensity control on that chorus. Lovely. But I didn't actually get to try that one. I did try out the Teeth, which I really enjoyed. Which, like I said, yeah, it has like a. A very, very clean side, very glassy, and then an edge of breakup, kind of warm, very dynamic drive side. And then via the saturation control, you're blending between the two of them. Very versatile, like very versatile. I felt like you could get a lot of drive tones and it's, I think, detailed drive tones. That's what this did very well, if that makes any sense as a way of describing a drive, but some real detail, real depth to the drive, real character, very dynamic. Really loved it. Couldn't recommend it enough. I need to get hold of one because I didn't think it was great. And then, you know, I said about the Atari switch style foot switch, dear listener. There's also a great big like what do you call those switches? The breath switch on there. What do you call those? A big.
I don't know. It looks like a light switch, doesn't it?
Yeah, like a
You've got two. It's on or off, basically.
Exactly, but yeah, bit like a sort of like a great big sort of 80s style switch there, and the breath switch just adds, as described, an airiness to the upper mid frequencies. So it's just like a mid boost, but it's wonderful. It actually added so much character, especially when you're boosting the gain. Like really changed the voicing of the pedal, but. Yeah, discrete low gain overdrive is how the Teeth is described on their website. But oh, dear listener, like I felt like I was discovering something here. It was like on the well trodden path of transparent overdrives. It was a very good transparent overdrive.
I think that's always the good thing about places like Denmark Street. They do tend to, you know, have quite a few effects from brands that probably people that live local to London or just, you know, make, you know, I guess that's how like Ranger Effects started. I remember seeing them sort of on Denmark Street first and stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's always quite cool, and then, you know, gets picked up by a couple of people, and, you know, could be the start of you know, big things from there on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they were very good. I sincerely hope that they do pick up. But I hope people go and check them out if you're in the London area near Denmark Street. Go into Wondrous and have a butcher's, because I thought they were absolutely great. Well worth having a look. Now, let's talk about some news just before we wrap up this.
You say this, news, Joe.
Sorry, I said news.
Yeah, go on, do it again. Vintage. Go on. It's the season finale. Go on, just do it again. Go on.
News.
Wow, I don't think it was as deep as you used to go. Maybe you're
age.
Yeah,
Jay.
I guess so.
I am getting old.
Most people that get like a deeper voice with age, you're just going more and more high pitched.
Oh, really? I thought I was going deeper.
You weren't going deeper. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, really? I didn't sound as deep to me.
You didn't think that was
I didn't think it was deep at all.
Oh, right. I see. Oh, I'm going up. I'm going up. Oh, that is. Maybe I'm unaging. Well, that's possible, I suppose. It could be. Benjamin Button. Yeah, Benjamin Brantoning this. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Branton. what a movie.
Yeah, that's Branton Pitt starring. Yeah. Well, anyway, let's do a little bit of news before we wrap up. Harmony Guitars, finally, I've been waiting for this because they've had it on their website for ages, and they've been teasing the fact that they're going to actually do reissues, because, of course, Harmony Guitars, their entire range, they are a vintage company, but they're a new company. All of their guitars, the Juno, the Silhouette, the Comet, etc., they're all inspired by those old Harmonies, but very, very new when it comes to appointments, you know, locking machine heads, gorgeous modern metallic finishes, these lovely, very modern, very articulate gold foil mini humbuckers or P90s or humbuckers. You know, they were... They look the part, but they feel very, very modern. That was the whole deal with Harmony. But they've said for a while they're going to do reissues. They're going to be recording classic models from the rich Harmony back catalogue. And finally...
Someone's finally cracked the safe where the yes. The blueprints were stored for all of the original measurements and everything.
That's what's happened, yes. They finally have cracked the safe. And really interesting, because it's not just, by the looks of it, it's not just going to be reissues. They're doing things slightly differently. So all of the Harmonies that we've come to know over the last few years, as the company have established itself, they're all made in Kalamazoo. They're all American-made. Insane prices for American-made guitars at the quality that they are. But they're all US-made in Kalamazoo. Now, the reissues are going to be made overseas. I can't remember off the top of my head if it's Korea or Indonesia. I think I'm pretty sure it's Korea. But then they are set up in Kalamazoo. I think a couple of other things happened to them in Kalamazoo as well. So they're going to be made overseas and then shipped over to Kalamazoo for the last bit. So you're getting an even more affordable guitar, and that is how the reissues are going to work, as opposed to the sort of premium line. And I love that they've separated that as well. They've given purpose to the reissues. They're not just making a more affordable version of the same thing. So, you know, people are buying one or the other, because that can shoot you in the foot. Like, we all remember the Music Man Sterling James Valentine and how good it was. You know, that can be a problem. You want to make the same thing overseas, you better make sure, you know, there's enough of a difference between the quality of both of those. Whereas this is a totally different product. Great idea. And, yeah, they've reissued the H72, which isn't a model that they've really... That they've tried to do in the standard line, more of a 335 Hagstrom-y style vibe from the H72, with very interesting F holes as well.
Do you know what I'm liking is the varying pickup design, cover pick up cover designs that you're seeing on loads of different stuff recently. To me, it just, I don't know, it's just a nice touch.
And have you seen the name of the design on the
mustache?
The mustache gold foil, because it very much does have the, I think it's almost more like an F-hole almost design on the, or two F-holes alongside each other on the pickup itself. But yes, you know, amusingly named the mustache gold foil.
Oh, I'm really excited.
I absolutely love the headstock. I think the headstock looks really cool.
Yeah, it's that angled, you know, black bound six aside Harmony headstock. The very classic. What you would expect from a Harmony headstock. Mm. But I agree with you. Looks lovely on that 335 style guitar. Like, just different, just a bit different. I'm into this, and the fact that I haven't seen prices on this yet, actually. But I'm just excited. I'm excited anyway. Loving the sort of the there's a little diamond, dear listener, that the toggle, the pickup toggle is in. It's lower horn instead of upper horn, which makes sense to me, I think. I'd rather have it there. That's a better position. I'd love it. I think this is wonderful. I haven't seen if there are any finish options on it yet. I think it's just...
I think it's just the cherry red, looks like.
Oh. It does look like the cherry red. I've just clicked on it on the website. I don't know why I didn't before. I was just looking at the pictures, but you can actually, I see you can see a price. So it is $699 US.
Oh, wow. That's very reasonable.
If you purchase direct from harmony.co. But yeah, that is very reasonable, isn't it? I am excited to see what else comes out in this range. Affordable new harmonies that are still teched in Kalamazoo. Yes, I can get behind that.
You just know they're gonna be really good. You just know, yeah. You know, based on the Juno and stuff, I think these, you know, they're gonna make sure that whatever they put out really, you know, passes all the right checks, I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's been the thing, hasn't it, about Harmony? Is I don't think they're not throwing anything out. You know, they're only going to release things if they're absolutely right. There's a lot of attention to detail at that company. Because let's face it, they could have done what, you know, Dan Electro are doing or what Silvertone are doing and you know, churn out affordable versions of the original guitars that are inspired by them, but they're certainly very much just, you know, made overseas. And they're designed for the look. It's the look. That's what you're buying. That's why they're affordable. And that's fine. I'm happy to make that. I'm not criticizing those guitars. That's, you know, that's a compromise I'm willing to make for that look. And that, they know that as companies. But Harmony very much want to keep on to the this is quality side of things, as well as the, you know, this is quirky side of things.
Which... How long has Bane been working for them?
Well, Bane's more like that, isn't he? Oh, what a lovely voice.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Maybe you're right.
Oddly high-pitched. You would have thought he'd have gone for a more sort of like, I am Bane. But it was more, hello, oh, yes.
Oh, Batman.
Yeah, no, you're right. You've totally got me there. That was, yeah completely.
Oh, well. Yeah, it was more a Batman, if anything.
Yeah.
Swear to me. That sort of thing, you know. But anyway, yes, the new Harmony, it looks absolutely terrific.
It does.
You should check it out, dear listener. Check it out. Now there are, you know, we've come to the end of this week's podcast, which is a shame because we've got other things to talk about. We'll go and talk about them in the Patreon, maybe. You know, Matt, you wanted to talk about the Yvette Young, the new Yvette Young, the YY20. A new signature model for Yvette Young and the weird tuning that it comes in. So we'll go talk about that in the Patreon episode along with Mark Packham and a bunch of other stuff. But yes, it is, dear listener, the end of season two.
Sad times.
Sad times indeed. Well, don't worry, fear not, dear listener, we're going to be back for season three. There's going to be a whole
new... Has the network renewed it?
Oh, yeah, the network has renewed it for a third season. There's going to be a whole new look. Oh, it's going to be great. There's going to be new stuff, new hosts. Oh, my goodness. It's going to be exciting times. But dear listener. If you're not a Patreon supporter, don't worry, we're going to be back in a couple of weeks with the Gear of the Year podcast to argue about what is the greatest guitar, the greatest amplifier, and the greatest effects pedal of 2021. We're simplifying the categories this year because, you know, it's a weird year. It's a weird year. Maybe next year there'll be all. It's another weird year. Who knows? Maybe next year we'll be talking about, loads and loads of categories again when there's been tons of releases. Somehow I doubt it. But we'll see. We'll see. Watch this space. But anyway, yes, do come and join us on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you'll get this episode ad-free and early every week. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episodes and our back catalogue. $10 gets you the lot. Plus, I sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. You can find us on all your favorite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thank you for listening. You have been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Peshe. Pesh. Peach. Pisha. Porsche, Pesca, Pescale, Joe Pesci, Peter Pesci, Porsche, Peter Porsche, Porsche Peter, Peach, Peter Peach, Peter Peach, Peter Peach. Anyway, yes, that's right, dear listener. We've come to the end of season 2 of the Guitar Nerds podcast, and it's Christmas. So what better than for me to thank you all personally at the end of this episode. Don't worry, Gear of the Year is still to come in a couple of weeks, but I thought I'd take this moment to tell you all what fantastic human beings you are. So thank you to Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, Ben Harder, Jorin Brown, Holly Simpson, John Conaway, Eric Vaughan, Russell Healing, Paul Drew, Peter Pesce, Ty Allen, Yogi, the guitarist, Kyle Harris, Cloud Lifter, Joe Hoppard, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Shane Malloy, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Samuel Frost, Gavin van der Linden, Andy Manley, Robert Butterworth, Scott Utting, Mark Hazau Kadawaki, Simon Milbourne, Stuart Robson, Christian Lund Hansen, Keith Adams, Eric File, Jack Cutmore, Joe Puttick, James Dorr, Abe Matthews, Ken Sayers, Kytopia, the band, John Anglin, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Berg, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Loset, Derek Rich, Blake Weiland, Rob Nordvik, J.D. Short, Steve Merkel, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Robin Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, and Moog Gravit. Thank you all. Thank you one and all. Now, I shall leave you with a Christmas wrap. That's right, a Christmas wrap. Merry Christmas, everyone. Farewell.
Enjoy the podcast banter. Be good, get guitars from Santa, 'cause you're all my Patreon backers. Party hats and the Christmas crackers. Fill your ears, J-Matt, Mark and me. Telecasters, burn out your tree. Holly, tinsel and the mistletoe. Sit back, relax and get a kiss from Joe. Hear your names read out by me, of course. I'm your own boss, I'm old Santa Claus.
Merry Christmas to you. When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.